Welcome back to the Crypto Daily, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into the fascinating world of meme coins and their recent market performance. Joining me is Ethan Altcoinberg, a seasoned crypto analyst with a keen eye for market trends. Ethan, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sophia. Always a pleasure to talk crypto.
So, Ethan, meme coins like Dogecoin and Shiba Inu have seen some surprising surges lately, even with positive economic data that traditionally bolsters the US dollar. What's fueling this unexpected rally?
It's definitely counterintuitive, Sophia. You'd expect a strengthening dollar to dampen crypto enthusiasm, especially for more volatile assets like meme coins. Part of it might be investors buying the dip after the recent sell-off. Remember, these tokens are highly speculative, and even small market movements can trigger significant price swings.
That makes sense. But some analysts also point to long-term oil concerns as a potential factor. Can you elaborate on that?
Right. There's a theory that investors are looking past the immediate geopolitical tensions in the Middle East and focusing on the potential for an oil glut next year. If oil prices stabilize or even decline, it could weaken the dollar, making crypto, including meme coins, a more attractive investment.
Interesting. So it seems like a tug of war between short-term dollar strength and long-term oil uncertainties. But Ethan, let's not forget about Bitcoin. While meme coins steal the spotlight, Bitcoin seems to be facing headwinds from whale sell-offs and token unlocks. How significant are these factors in the grand scheme of things?
They're definitely something to watch, Sophia. Large-scale sell-offs can put downward pressure on price, and token unlocks increase circulating supply, potentially diluting value. However, it's important to note that institutional interest in Bitcoin remains strong. We're seeing significant inflows from ETFs and futures markets, which is helping to stabilize the market.
So, a classic case of conflicting forces at play. On the one hand, we have short-term selling pressure, and on the other, continued institutional adoption. It'll be interesting to see how this dynamic plays out.
Absolutely. And let's not forget the upcoming halving event, which historically has been a bullish catalyst for Bitcoin. It'll be fascinating to see if history repeats itself.
Indeed. Now, shifting gears a bit, there's a new meme coin on the block, Kudoshi, generating a lot of buzz. What's your take on this latest contender, Ethan?
Kudoshi is intriguing because it's trying to differentiate itself by incorporating DeFi elements. It's not just about riding the meme wave. It aims to build a decentralized exchange and offer staking rewards. Whether this translates into long-term success remains to be seen, but it's a development worth monitoring.
Speaking of Ethereum, a recent report from Binance really caught my eye. It suggests that Ethereum's inflation rate is on the rise, reaching 0.74%, and this has sparked a debate about its ultrasound money status. What are your thoughts on this, Ethan?
It's a fascinating development, Sophia. The ultrasound money narrative has been central to Ethereum's appeal, emphasizing its deflationary nature. This report challenges that narrative, pointing to reduced on-chain activity and lower burn rates as contributing factors.
The report specifically highlights the impact of Layer 2 solutions like Arbitrum and Optimism. How are these solutions influencing Ethereum's inflation rate?
Layer 2s are designed to improve Ethereum's scalability by processing transactions off the mainnet. This reduces congestion and lowers gas fees, which is fantastic for users, but it also means fewer transactions are happening on the Ethereum mainnet itself. And with EIP 1559 burning a portion of transaction fees, this decrease in on-chain activity directly translates to a lower ETH burn rate.
So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. Layer 2s improve user experience, but potentially impact Ethereum's deflationary mechanics. It seems Vitalik Buterin is aware of this. He recently voiced support for reducing the minimum ETH required for solo staking, aiming to encourage wider network participation. Could this help offset the rising inflation?
It's a step in the right direction. Lowering the barrier to entry for solo stakers could lead to increased network security and decentralization, which are crucial for Ethereum's long-term health. However, it's uncertain whether this alone will be sufficient to counterbalance the impact of reduced on-chain activity.
It's a complex issue with no easy solutions. On the one hand, Layer 2s are essential for Ethereum's scalability. On the other, they seem to be influencing its monetary policy in unintended ways. Interestingly, while Ethereum grapples with these challenges, other Layer 1 blockchains are gaining traction. A report from VanEck highlighted the performance of monolithic blockchains like Solana, Sui, and Aptos, which saw significant price gains in September. Could this be the start of a shift in the Layer 1 landscape?
It's certainly a trend worth watching. Monolithic blockchains, with their unified architecture, often boast higher throughput and lower transaction costs compared to modular approaches. This makes them attractive for certain use cases, particularly those involving smaller payments, asset tokenization, and NFT minting.
And Sygnum Bank echoed this sentiment, suggesting that Solana could seriously challenge Ethereum, especially in the realm of real-world asset tokenization and stablecoins. Do you think Ethereum's dominance is genuinely under threat?
Ethereum still holds the lion's share of the DeFi market, and its network effects are undeniable. However, the emergence of these competitive layer ones highlights the importance of innovation and adaptability. Ethereum can't afford to rest on its laurels. It needs to continue evolving and addressing its challenges, particularly in terms of scalability and transaction costs, to maintain its leading position.
It seems Brazil is taking a bold approach to its CBDC, DREX, by incorporating elements of DeFi. They're aiming for a multidimensional CBDC, addressing decentralization, privacy, and programmability. What are your thoughts on this ambitious strategy, Ethan?
It's a fascinating development, Sophia. Most CBDC projects shy away from decentralization, sticking to a more controlled approach. Brazil seems to be recognizing the potential benefits of DeFi, like increased efficiency and transparency, and trying to integrate those aspects into DREX.
And they're not just stopping at theory. They're actively experimenting with these concepts in the pilot program, even incorporating liquidity pools for government bonds and international trade finance. It sounds like they're really pushing the boundaries of what a CBDC can be.
Absolutely. This fusion of traditional finance with DeFi principles is quite novel. It'll be interesting to see how they navigate the regulatory challenges and balance the need for control with the openness of DeFi.
It's also worth noting that Brazil is running this CBDC project in parallel with their Open Finance Initiative, which promotes competition in the banking and payments sector. It seems like they're aiming for a more inclusive and interconnected financial ecosystem.
Indeed. By fostering competition and integrating DeFi elements, Brazil could potentially create a more efficient and accessible financial system. However, the success of this approach hinges on their ability to strike a balance between innovation and regulation.
So, Ethan, this recent analysis from the Financial Times really shines a light on a fascinating shift in the ETF landscape. Active ETFs are grabbing a much larger slice of the fee pie, even though they represent a smaller portion of overall assets. What are your thoughts on this trend?
It's quite a turnaround, Sophia. For years, the narrative has been all about the rise of passive investing and the decline of active management. But this data suggests that active managers are finding ways to compete, especially within the ETF wrapper. The higher fees they command are clearly a significant factor in their revenue growth.
It's interesting to see how active managers are leveraging ETFs for strategies that go beyond traditional market cap weighted indexing. Things like factor rotation, covered calls, and even leveraged crypto plays. These are areas where active management can potentially add value and justify those higher fees.
Exactly. And the data seems to suggest that investors are willing to pay for that perceived value, at least in certain segments of the market. The success of funds like the Volatility Shares 2x Bitcoin Strategy ETF with its 1.9% expense ratio shows that there's an appetite for active management in more niche or complex areas.
However, it's important to remember the cautionary note sounded by Morningstar. Just because a fund charges a high fee doesn't automatically translate to outperformance. Investors should always carefully consider whether the potential benefits of active management justify the higher costs, especially when there are often lower-cost passive alternatives available.
Absolutely. Past performance is never a guarantee of future results, and that holds true for active ETFs as well. It's crucial for investors to do their due diligence, understand the fund's strategy and risk profile, and make sure it aligns with their investment goals and risk tolerance.
Well, Ethan, AI predicting asset prices is nothing new, but this Rexis Finance prediction caught my eye. Tokenizing real-world assets like real estate is a hot topic, but a $10 price tag by 2026 seems optimistic, even with AI's blessing. What are your thoughts?
I agree, Sophia. It's easy to get swept up in the hype, especially when you're talking about a sector as potentially disruptive as real estate tokenization. The concept itself is fascinating, democratizing access to traditionally illiquid assets. But the jump from an over 5-cent presale to $10 in a few years, that's a steep climb, even considering the ambitious roadmap they've laid out.
Exactly. And while their presale numbers are impressive, surpassing $1.8 million, it's crucial to remember that the crypto market is still in its infancy. We've seen projects with promising starts fizzle out before. The limited token supply of 65 million RXS could work in their favor, but it's not a guaranteed path to success.
Absolutely. The limited supply argument hinges on demand significantly outstripping supply, which is a big if. Their success will depend on several factors, including regulatory clarity around real estate tokenization, their ability to secure partnerships with major players in both the traditional finance and blockchain spaces, and of course, broader market sentiment.
The article mentioned whale investors showing interest. While that can signal confidence, it's also worth noting that whales can sometimes manipulate markets to their advantage. Individual investors should exercise caution and not solely rely on the actions of these large players.
That's a crucial point, Sophia. Don't just follow the whales. Understand the why behind their movements. In Rexis Finance's case, it's about assessing the viability of their real-world asset tokenization model. Can they bridge the gap between traditional finance and the blockchain effectively? That's the million-dollar question, or perhaps even the $10 question in this case.
So, Ethan, let's pivot to another hot topic in the crypto world, XRP. It's been a whirlwind for XRP holders lately, with the news of the first ETF filing, followed almost immediately by the SEC's appeal of the Ripple ruling. What's your take on this timing? Coincidence or something more strategic?
It's hard to say for sure, Sophia. The SEC was facing an October 7th deadline to appeal, so it's possible this was just a matter of them playing their cards at the last minute. However, the optics of it are definitely interesting, especially given the timing of the Bitwise XRP ETF filing.
Right, it's almost as if the SEC wanted to throw a wet blanket on any excitement building around the ETF possibility.
Exactly, and let's be realistic. The SEC's appeal significantly dampens the ETF's chances of approval, at least in the near term.
Several analysts are pointing to the 2024 U.S. election as a major factor in the XRP ETF's fate. What's your perspective on how the political landscape might impact this?
It's undeniable that the U.S. political climate has a huge influence on crypto regulation. A Trump victory, especially if he follows through on replacing Gensler, could create a much more favorable environment for crypto ETFs, including XRP. On the other hand, a Harris administration might signal a continuation of the current regulatory approach.
And this ties into the broader discussion of which altcoin might be next in line for an ETF, right? Solana was initially seen as a contender, but its regulatory uncertainty complicates things.
Absolutely. The SEC's lawsuit against Binance, which listed Solana as a potential security, throws a major wrench into any SOL ETF aspirations. Ironically, the court ruling in favor of Ripple, stating XRP is not a security, puts it in a much stronger position, despite the ongoing appeal.
It's a fascinating dynamic. Even if the XRP ETF gets approved, there's still the question of investor appetite. The muted response to the ETH ETF so far raises some concerns.
That's a valid point. While an XRP ETF would offer diversification beyond Bitcoin and Ethereum, it's unclear if institutional investors are ready to jump in headfirst. Many are sticking with the perceived safety and liquidity of BTC and ETH products.
So, Ethan, MicroStrategy's stock is on a tear, surging over 27% last month. And what's fueling this growth? Bitcoin, of course. It seems like every time Michael Saylor adds more Bitcoin to MicroStrategy's balance sheet, the stock takes another leap upwards.
It's a fascinating case, Sophia. MicroStrategy has essentially become a Bitcoin proxy, its stock price mirroring the cryptocurrency's movements. Their recent debt-fueled Bitcoin buying spree, adding another 7,420 Bitcoins to their already massive stash, certainly caught the market's attention.
It's incredible. They're sitting on a Bitcoin hoard worth billions, making them the largest corporate holder globally. But it begs the question, does their core software business even matter anymore?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? While their software revenue is growing, albeit slowly, it's clear that investors are primarily interested in MicroStrategy for its Bitcoin exposure. Their recent software updates, even with AI enhancements, were met with a collective shrug from the market.
It's like their software business has become an afterthought. Investors are betting on Bitcoin's continued rise, and by extension, MicroStrategy's holdings appreciating in value.
Exactly. It's a high-risk, high-reward play. If Bitcoin skyrockets, as Saylor predicts, MicroStrategy investors will reap the benefits. But if the crypto market takes a downturn, well, their stock could be in for a rough ride.
So, Ethan, let's shift gears and talk about crypto wallets. With the growing adoption of cryptocurrencies, it seems like everyone and their grandma is talking about needing a crypto wallet. But what exactly are they, and why are they so important?
You're right, Sophia. It's a hot topic. In essence, a crypto wallet is like a digital vault for your crypto assets. It securely stores your private keys, which are essential for accessing and managing your cryptocurrencies.
And these private keys, they're like the passwords to your crypto fortune, right? Lose them and you've lost it all?
Precisely. That's why choosing the right type of wallet and ensuring its security is paramount. There are various types, each with its own pros and cons. You've got your hot wallets, which are always connected to the internet, making them convenient for transactions, but potentially more vulnerable to hacks. Then there are cold wallets, which are offline and offer enhanced security, but require a bit more technical know-how.
So it's a trade-off between security and convenience. For someone new to the crypto space, it can feel overwhelming. What advice would you give them when choosing a wallet?
It's all about assessing your individual needs and risk tolerance. If you're only dabbling in crypto with small amounts, a user-friendly mobile wallet might suffice. But for serious investors with significant holdings, a hardware wallet, which stores your keys offline on a physical device, is considered the gold standard for security.
And what about these custodial wallets we've been hearing about? They sound a bit like traditional bank accounts in the crypto world.
They do, but with a caveat. Custodial wallets are managed by third-party services, which can be convenient, but means you're entrusting them with your keys. It's like storing your gold in someone else's vault. You're relying on their security measures and trustworthiness.
So it seems there's no one-size-fits-all solution when it comes to crypto wallets. It's about finding the right balance between security, convenience, and personal risk appetite. So, Ethan, we've been discussing the evolving landscape of crypto wallets, but let's shift gears to a lighter topic with some serious social implications. Have you heard about this meme coin, Repost the Dog, aiming to break Twitter, or should I say X's, retweet record?
Oh, absolutely. Our dog has been creating quite a buzz. It's a fascinating case study in leveraging the power of memes and decentralized communities for a shared objective.
It's certainly an unconventional approach. Most crypto projects we discuss focus on complex DeFi protocols or groundbreaking blockchain technology. But our dog is all about harnessing the viral potential of dog memes on social media. Do you think this strategy is sustainable?
It's hard to say for sure. Meme coins are inherently volatile and often driven by hype. But our dog's ambition to break the retweet record adds a unique social layer. It's tapping into the power of collective action, which we know can be incredibly potent, especially online.
It's a fascinating example of how cryptocurrency can go beyond just financial applications. Our dog is essentially using its meme status to fuel a social movement. And it's not just about retweets, it's about community engagement and showcasing the power of decentralized efforts.
Exactly. It'll be interesting to see if they can sustain the momentum and actually achieve their goal. It's a long shot, but the crypto space has taught us to never underestimate the power of a dedicated community.
Indeed, Ethan. And that's the beauty of this space, its ability to constantly surprise us with innovative ideas and unconventional applications of blockchain technology. From the complexities of secure wallets to the social virality of meme coins, it's clear that the crypto world continues to push boundaries and challenge traditional notions of finance and community. Thanks for joining me today, Ethan. It's been an enlightening conversation, as always.